The Haunting of the Sally House. We're talking with survivors Deborah and Tony Pickman about their very unique, very well-documented case. A show that was a haunting that was actually covered on Sightings numerous times and has been the focal point of other television shows, talking about one of the most well-documented hauntings in the United States. We were talking in the first hour about how this story began, the very gentle, soft ways that the spirits of the house would let themselves be known. Hour two, you could feel the shift as the spirits became a lot more violent, a lot more active, scratching, biting, harassing, molesting Tony Pickman as the main focal point of this case. Multiple spirits showing themselves throughout the house, from a child to a woman to doppelgangers of Deb to an older woman who looked like Mrs. Olson from the Little House on the Prairie series. We've been talking to them about this weird part of the angle and the fact that Tony believed he was dangerously close to possession, that this thing was starting to win him over, take him over. The oppression, the breaking down, and the eventual possession of Tony Pickman. All the while, his wife still kind of clueless to just how dangerous things were getting. Tony, did you ever act out in a violent nature, aside from the wants and desires that you'd had at times and being aware of the fact that you wanted to hurt your family? Did things ever act out? Did you ever do something physical that was a very violent nature?
Not to Deb. There was a time, and I don't mean to laugh because it was so serious. I hate the fact that it happened. Somewhere, it was another morning, and it was actually the morning that I had planned on harming Deb. And somewhere, a cat had gotten in our house, and it wasn't one of our cats. I hate even thinking about it that it happened.
Let me preface this real quickly for listeners, because I know you don't know Deborah and Tony personally. I've had the pleasure of becoming friends with them, and I've talked to them numerous occasions. The laughter that you hear Tony sharing at this moment is awkward, uncomfortable laughter. This isn't something that he's proud of. This isn't something that he thinks is funny. This is a moment that's very hard for him to talk about, and this is the way he reacts. So before you inundate me with hate mail of him laughing before this aspect, just get an understanding that this is a weird point for them to have to share. But all right, Tony, I just wanted to throw that disclaimer out for you.
Yeah, and thank you for doing that, because you're right. It's more of a nervous laughter, because I hate the fact that it happened. Yeah, short story, or long story short, I ended up killing a cat. I had stabbed it with a knife to the kitchen counter.
Because it drank out of a bowl of milk,
drank out of my cereal bowl. That was so unlike me. We are such animal lovers.
That snap you too? I mean, did you realize, holy crap, what did I just do?
It didn't, Dave. I had done it. I had taken off that day, had gone to my mother's and come home, and that's when it kicked in what I did. Like I said, when you left the house, it's like you could think clear again. It was like a big weight just lifted off, and as soon as you came in, that big heaviness, it's like you just changed as a person. And I'd walked in the kitchen, I'm like, oh, my God, and literally just probably broke down in tears because I couldn't fathom what I'd done. And that was the beginning of the last straw for me. It was like I literally had to grab them and say, this is, we've got to get out of here. It's just getting too out of hand. I have no control anymore, and I can't stop it. I felt so freaking helpless. And what caused her to finally listen to that, I don't know. But luckily she did.
Let's take a break. We'll open up phone lines as well. If you have questions for our guests about their experiences, you can address them at this point, and we'll continue to find out the final straw. What made Deb finally change and realize that this was no longer something that was controllable? What happened when they finally moved, and were they finally free of the haunting of the Sally House? What happened to the house now? Stay tuned. The story continues right after this. The haunting of the Sally House. Deborah and Tony Pickman are guests this evening as we've discussed this very bizarre haunting, the very violent endings to this. This was definitely focused on you, Tony. Was there ever anything that was happening to the baby?
As far as we get to that point, no. I mean, nothing physically, nothing, you know. Being a baby, you can't just ask them, you know, are you seeing something? And that was always in the back of my mind, I know. And
I remember him being very fearful all of a sudden of one of his favorite toys, to the point where just the sight of it across the room just sent him in a screaming fit and crying. And he was probably 10 months old or something, and we actually, to get it, like, out of his life, we put it in a paper bag and we put it outside with the trash. I mean, he went with me, so he knew it went into the trash, and he was fine after that. But there would be times where, you know, Tony or I would take him upstairs to go to sleep at night, and, you know, he'd cling, you know, before he went to bed. And so was that a developmental, you know, separation anxiety that he was going through, or was this something that terrorized him in his room? You know, it was very hard to lay him down in his room quite often.
And very sudden, you know, as things progressed in there, I don't think we really even let him back in the nursery. He was pretty much in our room constantly.
Even into the next house that we moved into, he slept with us.
Well, before we leave this house, you had sightings come in. How many total times did sightings go through your house?
Oh, six, and I think there were eight episodes, five or six. And there ended up being eight episodes. Two they did independently after we moved out of the house.
When they would come there, the most frightening aspect to me is that these things would happen on film as you were going through the house. And was Peter James, the psychic, involved in all the episodes, or did he come along later?
I think they brought him in on this, second or third episode.
And when he came in, how quickly was he able to establish what was going on in that house?
What he picked up very quickly was the name Sally. When he got upstairs to the master bedroom, he picked up on a female energy that was very dominant over that room, didn't want to let him in.
Burning his face,
shocking him on the hand. I was standing at the doorway at one point when he did enter the room, and he said something very demanding, and I felt a rush of cold air like fly past me and head in the direction that Tony was standing in, because we had already ascertained that, you know, distinct things happen around Tony when sightings comes up. I looked straight at Tony to see if there was any reaction, you know, after I felt that gust. And he just kind of quickly turned and walked away. Come to find out, it's because he did feel something, but he didn't want, you know, to make
point,
a big
I was
deal
so
about
tired
it.
Of being you know, you almost kind of felt like a lab rat, and I just didn't want it to keep going, and I was scared to tell him any time that I got scratched. And by now, they'd kind of learned my expression, so I think even Peter noticed.
Yeah, well, he turned to you and said, "This is fearful of Tony."
Yeah, and at that point, I was pacing, and I'm like, well, I wanted to say, yes, there is.
Right. Did he realize that you were being attacked yet, or was that something that you were hiding?
That was something I was hiding at the time, and I think it was Deb Camore. She said, no, something's bothering him. I can tell by his expression. And they kind of coaxed it out of me. I said, while you're in there and having trouble.
It's all the cold draft at my back.
Yeah, I'm feeling that cold feeling on my back, and so I know something's happening.
Peter had asked the question, who is in this house? And when Tony ended up lifting his shirt after that cold draft, the letters M as in Mary and C as in Charles were on his back. And we kind of I had done research on the house, and we kind of thought maybe that was Michael Charles Finney because he was one of the owners of the house. Yeah, it was very big. I think the letters were 4 or 5 inches tall on his back.
Wow.
Pretty significant. They weren't superficial at all.
Dave, what people didn't get to see was as we were walking away from, we, you know, kind of, okay, he's been scratched. They took photos of that. We're walking away, and the sound man's behind me. And he's got the big boom thing over me, you know, so he can hear us talking. And all of a sudden, he starts screaming, "Stop, stop, you're on fire, you're on fire." I didn't even know. My shirt just went up in flames. And they didn't get that on film because it happened so quick. But, it burned a hole right through the back of my shirt.
Now, this ghost was known to be a fire starter as well, correct?
Oh, yeah.
How many times would you say that these strange combustions would take place?
Oh, at least a dozen or more. There were
most of the time with an oil lamp, it tended to light this oil lamp.
Some of the toys, teddy bear
downstairs.
Candles. We had, in fact, Tony discovered them one day when he was at home doing something. We had sconces, and because we had cats in the house, we never lit candles because they were dangerous. You never know when a cat's going to rub up against and tip them over or whatnot.
Right.
So we had candles just for decoration or for the smell that they, you know, the aroma. And we had two paper candles in sconces on the wall over the couch. And he got to looking closer at one of them because there was something odd about them. And there were a very small set of finger, like tip prints embedded in not only, I mean, I didn't even unwrap the candles. They still had that cellophane wrap around them. So the cellophane wrap at the base of the candle is burnt brown to a crisp, and there's indentations in the candle itself. And the most odd thing about the candle is there was wax dripping up the wick instead of down.
They would drip up.
How is that even possible?
Well, Howard Heim was a paranormal investigator at the time that was brought in the house, and this was one of the things that, you know, they brought to his attention. And, you know, he trying to be, you know, a logical skeptic about the situations and try and process, you know, how these things could take place, you know, whether it was a hoax or put on or something. You know, he said maybe, you know, this could be recreated with like a hairdryer or something or a heater vent.
They tried to light several and
well,
tip them upside down.
I know. I did. I don't remember them. I don't remember them doing it.
I remember Howard did one.
Oh.
And
I tried too.
Instead of it just melting or and dripping up the wick, it would pretty much melt the whole tip of the whole top of the candle. I mean, the flame
it would deform the candle.
Yeah, and it would go right back out. So
there was no way to recreate it.
What was the final straw? What broke the camel's back and got you to finally get out of there?
Tony had called me at work. He'd been trying to sleep during the day, and while we were on the phone, he described this, you know, mist kind of thing, or the dust particles that you would see near a window forming at the end of the bed. And he said, you know, she's here with me right now. It's forming at the end of the bed. And we must have talked probably a good 4, 5, 6 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just kind of dissipated. But by the time I got home, which was, you know, maybe 6 hours later, he said, "Oh my God, you're never going to believe what happened." I was standing at, you know, in the bedroom and was walking out, and I got shoved so hard. It was like a full grown man, you know, bigger than me, was just gave me the shove of his life. And he said, "I hit the railing and knocked out rungs. I don't know what stopped me from going over the stairs." And we went upstairs, and there were like 4 or 5 rungs out on the stairs. He said, "I left the floor." He said, "I thought I was going over the railing." And, you know, I don't know why that got through to me.
I never did.
That there was a danger.
Out of all the things, I thought, you know, she was gone, so she has no proof except for the rungs being out. And all I can figure was she must have finally seen the, I know at this point I was so
It may have been the tone of his voice or the look on his face at one point or something, but I did. I finally said, maybe it's time we leave. And I started, I don't think it was that night, the next day I started looking for apartments or houses. Or
we were out probably
2 weeks later.
Yeah.
Did it get angry? Was it amping up when it realized you wanted out of there?
You know, I don't recall that at all.
I don't think it did. I just remember folks, it was just like, we got to get out of here. And that it was like a one track mind. I mean, we just focused on that. And
it was like, we almost had the energy that, and the drive that we're going to do this. We're going to do this now. We're going to do this quick and it'll be done. And it almost like that's where all of our energy went. And maybe, you know, if you know much about spirits, they collect the energy. They use it against you. They use it to do things that they do. And I think that our energy was between us so focused on what our ultimate goal was that there wasn't excess going to them. And they lost a little bit of the control that they had because we were in our relationship. I think we were really at peace for that 2 weeks.
I mean, I remember thinking those were the happiest words I'd ever heard you say was, we're going. I just remember it felt like a giant weight just off my shoulders. But I also know that I don't think the house was through with us, and it knew it. I mean, what we thought we were leaving and escaping was just a...
It was somewhat of a false positive.
Yeah.
And we've only got a few minutes left in this segment. Let me ask you, how did the owner of the house respond when you started bringing the attention of TV shows to the house? Was he a little irritated by this, or was he shocked to hear what was going
on? He honestly thought we were making it up. You know, and a lot of people did. You know, they thought we were for attention or, you know, if you don't know the behind the scenes what's going on, it's easy to, you know, make judgments. He thought we were making it up, thought it was all just a farce until when we moved out, he started, you know, repainting walls or, you know, a little bit of work here. He had ladders pulled out from underneath him. He had tools go missing. He had the radio turned on and it would turn off, et cetera. He started witnessing some of these
experiences. He actually did an experiment where he said, okay, if there's something here, call my cell phone at home.
At 7 o'clock tonight.
And sure enough, 7 o'clock that night, they called. He was a policeman here in town, and he said that when he would drive by the house, his equipment in the car would just go haywire until he got past the house. His sirens would go off, the radio would, you know, go off and on, and then once he got past the house, it was off. So, and he'll tell you to this day that he only spends short amount of time in there. He goes in and he does what he needs to do, but he doesn't hang out there long. He doesn't like being in there long.
All right. We're coming up to the top of a break here. I want to make sure that we can come back and chat with you. Phone lines are open. We'll take your calls if you have questions for the Pickmans. When we return, we'll also find out, did the ghosts stay in the Sally house? Are they still affected by that haunting? And the answers might surprise you. We've got so much more to cover this evening on the show. And if you've missed any part of tonight's show, first of all, shame on you. But don't worry, you can catch up on it. It's very simple. Just go to coasttocoastam.com and become a Coast Insider. For about 15 cents a day, you can become an insider and get archives going back as far as 5 years. You'll be able to hear some of the best guests in Coast to Coast history right on the website. They make them available to you. You can be a part of live chats with George Norrie and the other hosts. You can also be part of live chats with some of the best guests. That's all part of the package. You get access to their news, to the newsletters, and so much more. Well worth it. Go check out coasttocoastam.com right now and become an insider. We've got more of the Sally House, more of the haunting right after this. If you enjoy the strange and the supernatural, then I invite you to join me Monday through Friday night, 9 p.m. till midnight Central on Darkness Radio. We explore the supernatural, ghosts, psychic phenomena, monsters, myths, legends, and more on a nightly basis. 9 to midnight Central. You can stream the show right from our website at darknessradio.com. And then stay tuned, because as soon as we wrap up, George Norrie and Coast to Coast continues your journey into the bizarre. That's every night. You can stream it right from our website. Find our archives. More about live events that I'll be appearing at throughout the United States, like Phantom Fest in San Antonio, Texas, next weekend. Check it out, darknessradio.com. I'm Dave Schrader, your host for the evening, filling in for George Norrie. Tonight, we're talking with Tony and Deborah Pickman. They are survivors of the famous Sally House haunting. We're taking your phone calls. They're lighting up right now. You can also email me questions to dave@darknessradio.com. Here's a quick one. Dylan B. has written in and said, I want to thank the Pickmans for coming on. They're showing a lot of courage to come on air and tell a very personal story. I'm also curious, are you still married, and have you gotten over the negative time in your relationship?
Yes, we're still married. We just hit 20 years, or we're coming up on 21 in November. And, yeah, we've worked through a lot of negativity. We have still had some experiences after leaving the house that have put us in difficult positions, and honestly, we have come close to divorce a couple times, but we are very happily married.
Great. Now, you guys said that you had a few experiences after you left. Is the house still active at this point?
From what we know, we have not been there since
2007.
Yeah, he had an attack in 2007. That was our last investigation there. He was severely scratched up. There's photos on our website if you go to the investigations and look at the last investigation. There's investigators, groups of investigators that will rent the house for, you know, the night or the weekend or something like that. And from what we hear and understand, because we do get a lot of contact email in regards to some situations that arise after investigations, it is still very active over there.
I don't think
to the extent that we had experienced.
There have been a few cases that have been pretty outstanding that we've been asked, you know, they call us for help, or, you know,
how to deal with something or what signs to look for.
Some have been pretty severe.
You still have an attachment to this house, though. If things start to go south in that house, do you feel an effect on yourself now, Tony?
I do. I still have
scratches fire.
Happen from time to time.
We had a 12-inch knife thrown across the room, across his chest, and
pretty frightening,
his shirt.
Frightening things. We just try to keep it out of the
public eye. We don't want this to start all over again. You know, the publicity and, you know, another group like Sightings or something like that catching wind of it and wanting to come in with a battery of, you know, equipment and newfangled this and, you know, put us in that spotlight again. That's not what we are.
Well, we'll just keep it between the three of us and the 15 million listeners of Coast to Coast, I promise.
There's so much more that we don't say.
Right. Let's take a break. Then we'll take your phone calls for Deborah and Tony Pickman, survivors of the Sally House haunting, here on Coast to Coast AM. Deborah and Tony Pickman from the Sally House are online with us this evening. Check out their website, thesallyhouse.com, and that's S-A-L-L-I-E, thesallyhouse.com. Let's take a caller. First-time caller line, John in South Carolina. Welcome to the show. What was your question for him?
Doing tonight?
Good.
Very good.
I was just wondering with your husband how he dealt with seeing the entities. Kind of like a front story. Whenever I was 6 years old, I was in a severe accident and was kept in a coma for a couple weeks. And whenever I came out of it, my mother and my aunt was beside my bedside, but I also seen a elderly lady in one of the old wooden style wheelchairs with a nurse behind her, and I was the only one that seen it. And since then, my whole life, I've basically seen entities my whole life, and I haven't ever been able to deal with it because it's just like you said, it's extremely frightening.
Yeah, and it's just something you can't talk to your everyday person about with either. They kind of look at you like, yeah, what's wrong?
When you do that and you're seeing these type of entities, I mean, do you continue to see anything now, Tony?
I do occasionally. I tell you, I also think that as much as the house was horrible, there it was for me kind of a catalyst to. I see a lot more now than I used to, and I don't know if that opened up something in me or what, but I have occasionally. The house we're in now, I've seen when we first moved in, I had a problem of seeing an elderly old lady. Whenever I woke up, she would be hunched over me, and that was real frightening to deal with. And I finally just kind of come to terms with it, and I've got so much faith in God now to keep me safe. That's how I deal with it, and it seems to be working.
Thank you, John, for listening and giving us a call. Kimberly on Facebook says, awesome interview, guys. The house is definitely messed up when you know the cop that owns it is too creeped out to go in. Do you guys sage your new place, or what do you do to keep yourself protected in the new home?
The experiences that we've had living in the house and since the house has really drummed up my faith. I've seen absolute miracles, and healing. Know you witness a miracle, or know they exist when you witness one, or two, or ten. My faith in God is so strong, and Tony's faith in God has always been right there with him. And honestly, you know, in the support that we give each other, I think is a force to be reckoned with, both on this side and the other side. And I really think that between the two of those, you know, praying to God, I pray to God every day, giving thanks for, you know, just protecting us and keeping our family safe. And I honestly believe he does. Now, if you would have asked me, you know, 20, 30 years ago, you know, what my belief in religion and faith in God, then it would have been nil to nothing. But that is, I know that is what has kept us safe. That's what got us out of the house safe. And that's what will continue to keep us safe.
Tony, have you ever looked at talking to a professional psychic or medium and learning how to close down the ability you seem to have of being so sensitive and maybe working almost like a flame to these moths of spirits that seem drawn to you? Have you ever tried to close that down?
Yeah, I have over the years. And it's something I'm still in the process of working on. I've come a long way. And some people have been a big help. Peter James was a big help for me over the years. He, you know, I went back and forth with him, and Dan Hernandez out of California has been a godsend to me. I've worked with him or had to consult with him several times, and he's helped me learn how to shut a lot of things down. So you're right.
And in the process, you know, these people that we've, you know, all kinds of people that we've come in contact in the paranormal field have become very good friends. And Dan Hernandez is one of our oldest right now because he came in on, you know, the haunting and the experiences in the Sally House kind of early.
Has your ability been passed on to your son? Is he sensitive to any of the supernatural, Tony?
I think more than he wants to admit, and actually two of my sons, I believe, are both kind of pretty sensitive.
We've got
more accepting of it than the other.
We've got first-time caller line, Thomas in Alabama. Welcome to the show. What did you want to talk about?
Hey, how you doing? I just want to give a word to both of you. My wife and I, we are quite used to seeing strange spirits and apparitions and whatnot. We don't see them anymore, but that's because of our faith in Jesus Christ. And, you know, we believe that through our faith in Christ that we've been able to cast out numerous spirits that used to honestly plague us. We've seen a lot of ghosts and stuff, and they all, you know, at first seemed okay, and they all turned out to just be horrible demons.
Thank you very much, Thomas in Alabama. That's what you said. Your faith is what helps keep you strong now and keeps you feel as protected as you are, correct?
Well, the battery problem he's having, so we're just going to share mine. I've got you on speaker. Hope that doesn't degrade any of the
things. Oh, for the last few minutes, we should do fine with that. But that is what you said is kind of the base of your protection now.
Yeah, that's and keep that up because that's great. I think that's the best protection a person can have.
Let's go to wild card line one. Mike in Pennsylvania, you're on Coast to Coast AM. What did you want to ask the Pickmans?
Good morning, everybody, first off. I, too, live in a house that's not as radical as the one you guys left. Let's say that. Deb, I just listening to you guys over the last few hours, the big question and where I live and what I see and what I'm in tune with and what interacts with me, why did you stay so long, with all due respect? Why?
Part of it was the money situation. We spent everything to get into that house as quickly as we did. Deposits on utilities, newborn baby furniture. I mean, we were strapped to the gills. And especially after that first winter, we had $400 gas bills. We didn't have the funds to leave. Tony saw my interest in the paranormal and in some way wanted to allow me the luxury of having that little chance to interact with the paranormal. And the third factor, I think, was that we were both being influenced. I was being influenced to accept what was there and want to stay.
Part of it, I know there were times when I felt ashamed for being scared because I would see Deb and she didn't seem frightened by it. And being the man of the household, you know, it was hard to admit that I was that scared and almost kind of shamed into staying there.
Well, you said, too, and thank you for calling in, Mike. You said, Tony, that you felt that you started to create some kind of bond with this creature. You started to become like, this is our house, and Deb was the interloper.
Yeah, before we left, it was that's what it had turned into. It was more of I felt like I belonged to the house more than I did her, and she needed to go. And that's exactly what it turned into.
Wildcard line three, Fred in Atlanta, you're on the air. What did you want to talk to the Pickmans about?
Yeah, good evening. Very interesting program. I asked them, had they ever considered having the house exercised or blessed, or does the owner consider it maybe a gold mine sort of thing? I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you for calling in, Fred.
We did have a shaman-led medium come in. She happened to be a relationship of one of the sightings crew members, and she tried to basically exorcise what was in the house. That we had several weeks of quiet, and then it vamped up. Tony was actually seeing a priest for, a better part of a year or so, had known him all his life, pretty much. And he was going to come to the house to bless the house, and about a week beforehand, he died of a heart attack. And I'm trying to remember the second half of your question.
Well, it's fascinating that you have that much activity and all of these people trying to help, yet it seems centered. You know, it was focused. It wanted something from you guys, and apparently it still does because the action continues. Let's go to west of the Rockies, John in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show. What did you want to ask the Pickmans?
Yeah, how you doing? I just think that I think this was more of a demonic entity. These are not ghosts. Ghosts, I believe, don't exist. I think that the demons take... You know, when people do, they get mediums and all these different things, the demonic power becomes more powerful. And what happens is it attacks. For example, if you invite a shaman into your house or you do different things or you do EVP and all these things, that strengthens the demonic activity. Essentially, what it does is these things that occur to people is demonic activity.
Interesting point, John. You make a great point on that. Let me ask you real quickly, though, John. You say that you believe that there are no such things as ghosts. It's only demonic that would take these forms and shapes.
Right, because I myself have been attacked by people, and I've actually had an angel save my life once. So I know that there's angelic activity as well as demonic activity, and the demons attack humans because that's their job. That's what they do. So they can torment somebody in a house. They can pick one specific person, just like an angel can save a person's life. A demon can torment somebody, or if somebody's involved in certain activities, the demon actually becomes stronger and attacks people.
Thank you, John. We appreciate you weighing in. Do you believe it was strictly demonic what was attacking you, or do you believe that it might have been ghosts as well?
Personally, I feel like it was strictly demonic. In my view, Deb's got still a little bit different opinion, but the stuff that just occurred to me and the feelings that I was getting and having did not feel anything but to me. So I'm kind of along that same line.
Go ahead, Deb.
No, I was going to just give my take on that. I do think that, especially since so many investigators have gotten into the house since we moved out, I do think that there are some human spirits in the house, but I think that the demonic entity in the house, I sincerely believe there is a demonic entity in the house, a very strong one. And I think that this demonic entity basically uses the human spirits in the house at its will. And in some cases, I think that it keeps them from leaving. I think that's why you do find so much more activity in the house now.
Deb and Tony Pickman are guests this evening. Survivors, experiencers of the very active haunting at the Sally House. Again, one of the most widely covered and one of the most paranormal scenes in the United States. So many witnesses, so many people involved in this case. And the house is still there. It is open. People still investigate this. Tony does still feel the effect from time to time and is still attacked from this. It's a fascinating story. It's heartbreaking. It's enlightening. I appreciate you guys staying on and especially staying a little later with us this evening for this last hour. Thank you both for being a part of the show with us.
Thanks for having us, Dave. It's been fun.
Yeah, thank you very much for allowing us to speak to all your guests.
Certainly. It's been a pleasure. Check out their website, thesallyhouse.com. Get yourself the book. Again, we just glossed over some of the highlights and lowlights of what this family had to endure. Get the book for the complete story so that you understand exactly what they went through. Phone lines are open. I'm open to hear what you want to talk about. Give me a buzz right now. You're listening to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM.